Let you start whenever you're ready.
All right. I think I'm going to need Scott's expertise to get me back home.
Shannon's only supervised 20% of the time sitting out of the bathroom. I told you we're waiting for you in the bathroom.
That's him putting your needs above his.
Listening to the just listening.
I'm exercising what Scott's talking about. The slacker.
Just don't start throwing spit water.
That seems more like something I would have done as it should have gone then.
Well, I did it. Sure. I still sat on the front. Because you wanted to, or because you were made to? You were made to. Oh, you made to. It was definitely somebody else's fault. Somebody told me, you know, I mean, I didn't initiate.
I'm going to see if I can turn off just this front row of lights. You know? There we go.
There you go.
Is that going to work better for y'all?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about child training. I'm going to make the next two sessions shorter so that then we can get to the Q&A. I think Q&A, after several hours of talking, it'll be nicer to have Q&A instead of lecture. All right, so on child training, we talk about what children need. They need love, Titus 2:4. They need time. They need correction and discipline. And they need to be in a home that is dedicated to serving God. Biblical examples of parenting are a lot of them bad. You know, there are some really rough examples. There's choice of environment. You know, Lot, he's looking to what looks good career-wise, you know, profitability. He's not thinking about the environment he's taking his family into. There's deceit and favoritism in the patriarchs. There's the not restraining. You remember Eli? And he and his sons are going to die. Because what was the complaint against Eli? He wouldn't restrain them. Did he say anything? But what was he say? It's like, why do you do evil? You know, it's kind of a whiny, but not really leading. And then you got David, who makes Eli look like a good father. If you look at his son mentioned in 1 Kings 1:6, he's the guy that when David is about to die, one son just says, I'm going to be king, and tries to make himself king instead of Solomon. And the text says that David never at any time had said to him, why are you doing this? So at least on that comparison, Eli looks like he has a leg up there, because at least he did whine, why are you doing this? David didn't with that son. But then there's lasting influence, Jonadab. Anybody remember Jonadab and the Rechabites? Can you share that if you remember it?
He said the thing about not drinking alcohol or something? Whatever it was.
And not living in villages, and we're going to be shepherds?
They did what he had told them.
And there's something interesting there. So in the book of Jeremiah, God says, call the Rechabites, you know, have them come. And he says, look at that. He says, put wine in front of them. And they wouldn't drink it. And said, no, our father Jonadab told us not to do that. And then he says, now look, basically God's comparing, look at the allegiance this clan had to their, you know, patriarch compared to the allegiance Israel has to me. And they had some various, you know, they were going to be shepherds, they were going to live in tents. And there's something noticeable there. It's not wrong for you to have family rules. you need to be careful sometimes. Your family rules might not be somebody else's family rules, and you don't want to become pharisaical and raise little Pharisees who get the idea that they're superior to everybody else. They're more righteous than everybody else because they follow rules that other people don't. So let's take an example. One family decides to not have a TV. Can you think of a bunch of benefits that's going to accrue to that family that doesn't have a TV? Another family chooses to have a TV, but they're very careful about it. And say maybe they don't even bother to have cable. Or they have only select things, and they'll only allow certain things to be watched, and but they use it for some appropriate uses. Two good families. Nothing wrong with this decision. And this family's really going to benefit a lot from that decision, but you don't want those kids growing up thinking, the Johnsons are heathens, the TV, that type of thing. But don't be afraid to have rules in your family. And rules with some of your children. You might sometimes realize that something that started off innocent is starting to go in the wrong direction. Like with the rich young ruler, you know? If you've got a child and he wants to learn to play the guitar, and he's applying himself, and he and it's a good thing, great. But if he gets enthralled with some, band that has horrible lyrics and he's got their posters all over the thing and it's all about them instead of anything godly, be the parent, cut that off before it gets out of control. There's Timothy, who before him, where did faith exist? In his mother and in his grandmother. Proverbs 22 says, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. I'm going to share one of my goals in life. One of my goals in life is I want godly grandchildren. That's one of my main goals in life. I would like to have what my dad has. So, dad is 88, maybe this month. His children are Christians. All of his grandchildren are Christians. And his great-grandchildren are doing really well. Some of those are young. And when the whole family gets together, it's just like, nobody's coming in with a bunch of metal in their face and tattoos. Nobody's coming in identifying with new pronouns. Nobody's coming in with, this used to be my wife. Here's now my new wife. I want what dad has. And one way I've thought about it is this. If you take a legal pad and you write on the first page, you can read what's written there. But if you take that ballpoint pen and you make a deep enough impression, not only can you read the first page, but what? You can read the second page. And if you make a deep enough impression, you can still see it there. Now, after a while, your and my influence will be gone. And here's a good way to illustrate that. How many of you know your mother's full maiden name? Probably everybody. How many of you know your mother's mother's full maiden name? How many of you know her mother's full maiden name? Her mother. It's not going to be long until our descendants don't remember who we are. But if we'll make a deep impression, then your kids, you raise them to above all want to serve the Lord, not above all be a member of the church, but above all serve the Lord. If you're a member of the church of Laodicea, that's not doing you a whole lot of good. You want to serve the Lord. Raise your children to really want to serve the Lord, and that you engraved deeply, then they're engraving it, and they're engraving it, and that type of thing. Let's proceed here. A rod and reproof impart wisdom, But a child who is unrestrained brings shame to his mother. Ever been in the grocery store or Walmart? You know what we're talking about there. Child training. It's going to take time. And years ago, a lady named Judith Harris wrote a book, Do Parents Really Matter? It was on the nature-nurture argument. And it was reviewed in either Time or Newsweek way back then. And fortunately, back then, the reviewer realized this is a bad book, you know, and questioned some of the things in this book. But Judith Harris's answer was basically, there's not much you can do. She said children are going to be controlled by two things, their peers and their DNA. And that's it. You don't have an effect. And she said there are some things you can do. For example, since children are going to be controlled by their peers, you can make sure that you make enough money to live in the best school district. So that way they've got the good peers. Good, in quotation marks. And since appearances are important, make sure that you make enough money for braces, dress them in the latest styles, and if need be, plastic surgery. So that they will be well accepted, because that's what's going to phase it. And I thought this was like the most horrible, ridiculous thing, but then something occurred to me. If you don't spend time with your children, then they will be molded by their peers, their DNA, and social media and entertainment forces and stuff. So we already talked about a garden, you know, the difference between whether you tend it or not. What about this? A cat, a bird. How long does a mama cat have with a kitten? Not that long. How about a robin? The baby robin will peck its way out of the shell and within about 2 weeks fly. And pretty soon, it's on. Why don't you think about a human baby? Okay, who's got the youngest baby here? All right. So, how old's the baby? Is he out on his own yet? No. If he was a robin, he'd be middle-aged by now or something, you know, as far as this is freedom. But our babies aren't like that. They need us for a long, long time. And so that time is a gift to us as parents to use. And some weeks, maybe we're truly occupied with other things. You can't have every week the same level of focus as another, or every day the same level of focus as another. But if you let day after day and week after week just go and go, and suddenly it's been a year, and you haven't been that involved with your child, that's just, how are you going to get that in your back? I mean, then start for the next year, start now, but that, we've been given this gift of time, and so we want to use it. It takes about 2 weeks for the baby to fledge, and then they stay with their parents 2 or 3 weeks after that. So say 5 weeks in, and baby Robin doesn't need mom or dad anymore.
This topic of time, you know, we do, we have our kids, and they may be under our roofs for 18, 20, 20 some years. And one of the things that's really struck me during my personal years of being there is how much it's taught me about God.
Yeah.
Because He's our Father for our entire mortal life. And He sees us through our good times and our bad, through our times where we need correction, for the times we need forgiveness, for the times where we can celebrate. He's there all of the time. And
parenting is training children. And remember this, don't feel that you're being selfish when you make your child obey. If you think, well, you know, since I didn't want to obey, now I'm feeling bad, I required it of them, I feel selfish. don't feel selfish. You're training your child to submit to a parent, which is what they need in life, to submit to God. It's an important vow. It's very, very fundamental and foundational. All right, and so then, of course, we have the Deuteronomy 6 passage that Emerson opened us with in the passage of Ephesians 6. And the importance of starting early. Little kids can start learning things before they understand it, but they can start learning it early. Lesson number one, basic vocabulary. This English word right here, no. What does that word mean? It means no. This is one of the most fundamental things to get a child to understand. Once you've mastered this, then now what I'm about to say is some hyperbole and some overstatement, but I think it's also largely true. Once you get your child to understand and appreciate that no means no, and they must respect a prohibitory no, and that they are not entitled to use a rebellious no, half of your job of parenting is done. There's going to be a lot more things and a lot more work, but you've got the basic tools in place right there. When they learn no means no, and respect them. And we'll go over that in more detail in a minute. Early training and no, the importance of no. In the garden, God gives a commandment concerning the trees of the garden. What's the commandment? Yeah, it was a no-no. Now, how old are Adam and Eve? Yeah, in fact, Adam's there. Adam hears it. Yeah, Eve's going to come along a little bit later. Yeah, so they're new, and it's like, here's this command. How mature are Adam and Eve? I would think they look physically mature, but if you're new on the scene, you don't have a lot of wisdom yet. You don't have a knowledge of good and evil yet. There's a lot of things you don't know, and God gives them a no-no. See all the pretty trees. You can have all this one right here, no-no. And of course, what does Eve do? And what does Adam do? And does God say, don't make me tell you again? Kicked him out of the garden. Exodus 20. How would you rate the maturity of the Israelites of the Exodus? Scale 1 to 10.
3.
Yeah. Being generous, yeah. This is a whiny, whiny, short-sighted group of people. There are laws more important than the Ten Commandments. I know that because when somebody asked Jesus what the greatest law is, he didn't quote from the Ten Commandments. He quoted Deuteronomy 6. Right before the instructions to the children, about the children, it says, love the Lord your God with... Yeah, that's the greatest commandment. Then Jesus said, what's the second greatest commandment? Yeah, so there's a horizontal relationship. God's more important than me. I need to love and serve him. And then there's a horizontal relationship. I'm not more important than other people. I need to treat other people right. And Jesus, all the other laws in the prophets hang on these things. Like Paul was saying in Romans, all these things like don't commit adultery, don't lie, don't kill, don't steal, all that's wrapped up in if you love your neighbors yourself. But the kids, by the way, I enjoyed getting to see your kids at lunch. Whoever's watching them, if some of you may have done this, I do this when I leave my little kids with people I trust. And one time I was talking about this and somebody said, it's important to tell children you don't have to obey anybody but mom and dad. Yeah, I said, no. And they said, well, you know, what if you don't trust the person? I said, if you don't trust the person, don't leave your children with them. If I leave my children with you, I trust you, and I'm going to tell you, you know, treat them the way you would treat yours. If they need something, you take care of it. But imagine I'm watching all your kids, if you knew me better, and you gave me that privilege, and you said, you know, if he needs a swat or he'd get in the car and do that, and I think, oh, we're not going to have any, you know, all these 2 and 3 year olds, I'm going to explain to them self-respect and consideration, and we're not going to have any problems. We're going to have some problems. And I'm going to have to start getting specific. No on the hitting. No on the kicking. No on the eating the other guy's sandwich. You know, it's... We as humans, the principles are what's most important, but we need specifics. And the Israelites needed some specifics. And so the Ten Commandments are basically negatives. Now, you just do those negatives, that's not going to make you a Christian. The priest and the Levite that walked by the wounded man, they didn't kill him. They didn't steal from him. They didn't take his wife. But they also didn't love their neighbors themselves. But all that to say this, it's a bunch of no-nos, primarily. There's a few things in there that aren't. But a lot of the Ten Commandments are no-nos. No-no on the killing. No-no on the adultery. No-no on the false witness. No-no on the coveting. It's important and foundational. If you don't mean it, don't say it. I had a friend of mine when I was growing up, and his mom was like, no. And she was really annoying, and he was really annoying with his mom. In fact, one time he told me, he said, the only reason I don't slap her, this is a 16-year-old young man, the only reason I don't slap her is because I know what would happen when my dad got home. Now, moms, think of your little guy, and think how sad it would be that the only reason he does that. But she's a good woman, but she was annoying. She was just, I remember like one day, Mom, Scott and I are going, no, you're not. No. And he just kept arguing. You got a mother. I didn't. No. And then finally, after a while, well, how long will you be gone? And then we get to go. That's annoying to a child. And you're inviting debate and argument. So kind of remember, let your nay be nay and let your yay be yay. I'm not saying you can never change your mind with new information. If you've got a responsible child, if you've got a respectable child, and, you know, they're not an arguer, they're not trying to play debate, but you didn't know some information, and you said, oh, Mom, actually, I got my report done yesterday, and so-and-so and I, her mother had asked, and we get some new information, then you might say, oh, thanks for explaining that, yes. I'm not saying, you know, realistic, there's no sense of being stubborn, but you know what I'm talking about. Don't let your child get in the habit of thinking that when you say no, them playing lawyer is going to make a difference. So, vocabulary test. What does no mean to your child? And you can do this for different ones of your children and see. If they think no means tantrum time, then you've got some work to do with that child. Because that child has to learn that that is exactly not what no means. Never give a misbehaving child what they're trying to get. Don't reward misbehavior. Number two, if they think tantrum time means the defense attorney may now cross-examine, you've got some work to do. If they think no means don't do it while Mom and Dad are watching, you've got some corrective work you've got to do. If your child understands that no means no, you've done a lot of your work already. For example, they've learned to respect authority. They have learned, I won't always get my way. They have learned behavior is more important than desire. And by the way, I'll be glad to leave these slides if anybody wants them. They have learned self-denial and self-control. Now, when that 1 or 2 year old or 3 year old hits their teenage years, is it going to be a great benefit to them if they learn to respect authority? Back when they were little? Is it going to really pay off for them to already know from the beginning that they won't always get their way? And will that help them throughout their whole life? As a teenager, is it going to be very beneficial for them to know that their behavior is more important than their desire? And to learn self-denial and self-control. That's why I say, once you've got this really established, half your work is done, because the scaffolding is there in the heart. There will be new challenges, but that foundation is there. Learning to submit to an earthly father prepares the child for submission to a far more important father. Respect and compliance for the prohibitory no, and zero tolerance for the defiant and rebellious no. Because what do they learn after a little bit? No is a powerful word. And so, when I was about 18, I had two goals for my future family. And one of them was this. I'm not going to have a kid that goes, no. And I didn't. You know, we raised three boys, three girls. I'm not going to say none of them ever gave a defiant no. If they gave a defiant no, they found out why. They should not give a defiant no. Two things were like huge deals. If they had done that, and if they lied. And because on the line, it was because I knew by the time they're 16, I'm not going to know everything that's going on with them. And if I can't trust them, I won't be able to know what's going on. I remember when I was 16. And my dad asked me how fast I was going when I blew out the tire. And I said, I don't want to say. and he eventually made me say, and I told him. I wanted to know that I could trust my kids. So one of the times my oldest got in really, really big trouble. She was maybe two or so, or three, and there was ink pen writing all over her tennis. And I said something about what happened to her. And she goes, a snake did it. So, Eve could really blame a snake, you know. A snake did it. And I said, April, I said, a snake doesn't have hands to hold him. He held it in his mouth. and then she got really bad spanking for that. And I talked to her a long time first about the lie. And here's why I did it. At age two, Dad's ability to catch her in a lie made an impression on her. If I'd let her keep lying by age 16, she would have been better at it, and the lies would have been more clever, and I wouldn't know. And if you came to me and said, I saw your daughter doing this, and she said, I wasn't there, I wouldn't know who to believe. And so we had a big talk about it, and then that girl is a very truthful girl. I don't ever remember her telling another lie. You know, and because I made a big deal about it. If they give a defiant no. This one mom, same mom that told me, I don't have time to deal with every defiance. She used to call me and say, listen to him. She had one child that was easier for her, but he had his own issues. Another child that was hard for her. And she always viewed that child as defective. She would always want to say, there's something wrong with him. I'd take him for like and spend the afternoon with him, he'd be great. You know, and she'd say, look, if there was something wrong with him biologically that he couldn't behave, he'd misbehave for me too. Well, that's because he was with you. I said, well, that's the difference. He can control it. She let herself get into this antagonistic thing. She resented the child, and he would misbehave. And we were at the house one time having a study. And she told him to go downstairs, and this is what he did. He went, but as he went, he turned and he goes, and then he went, you know, just. And a few minutes later, she goes on some other subject. I don't know why he's the way he is. said, well, it's partly because, do you remember when you told him to go downstairs and he said no under his breath? And she goes, heard that? I said, yeah. I said, because you let stuff like that happen. It's just, and so she just built up this bad relationship with the child. It's not that you won't have a child that sometimes goes, nah, but they need to learn. And that doesn't mean you go straight to punishment. We're going to talk about that and rot it and proof. You have a discussion and really let them learn they can never, ever do that. That's not acceptable. And then whatever punishment is appropriate. Avoid having an upside-down home. We talked about looking at houses earlier. Suppose a realtor takes you to that house, and you're looking for a house, and think, I'd like to go inside and see what it's like. If the realtor pulls up and the house looks like this, how many of you want to go inside? Do you care if it has granite countertops? No. Do you care if it has hardwood floor? No. Because they're up there. It's upside down. This is not from me originally. This is either a quote or a modified quote, so I don't remember now. But the central idea is from a fellow named Michael Pearl, who wrote some books on child things. But this, I think, made a good point. Too many children view the home, the parents, the food, etc., as merely a means to an end to satisfy and please the child. The child makes his demands and manipulates the parents via tantrums and repeated misbehavior. Parents bow to the will of the child in efforts to placate and appease his whims and dissatisfactions, or suffer through the increased strife and conflict when they cannot. The home is like a house built upside down. And is that type of child going to be happy? Those are not happy kids. Kids need security and they need boundaries. They also need fun and they need yeses. Like going back to the no's and yeses. Good parenting is not everything's none. You know, Dad, can I play in the interstate? No. You know, can I play on the freeway? No. Can I play in my room? No. Can I breathe in and out? No. That's not good parenting. Lots of things should be yes. Dad, can we go outside and play ball? Yes. And maybe you were going to do something else, but sometimes just put that aside. Yes. Could we get pizza Friday? Could we? There should be lots of yeses. Not all the time. They shouldn't think that at any time they're, but there should be, have fun with your kids. You know, as you do, keep having fun with your kids. There's a question I want to ask you in the Q&A, and I want to say it now so I don't forget it. I want you to be thinking about a favorite memory that you have from growing up. And I want you to share that here in the Q&A. There's something very interesting learning about that. The child needs to understand it's not child first, then parents, then God. It's God, parent, father, mother, and then the child. A child left unrestrained. I told you I was going to tell you about this four-year-old. I used to live next to this four-year-old. His parents, the mother, had read the book, and so she wanted to go spank her child and stuff. I live here. They live there. Little boy lives over here. One day, they're out working in the garden, and he's over here, and they yell for him. To protect the guilty, I'll change the name. We'll say Fred. Freddie! Freddie, come home! I look over here, and Freddie's not paying any attention. He's playing with me for a little while later. Freddie, come home right now! Freddie, come home! And just over and over, they call, and he never comes home. Later, he decides he's ready to go home. Freddie walks across in front of me. I'm at my front steps there, and it's he and the little boy with him, who was younger than him. I said, Freddie, why didn't you go when your parents called? He goes, I didn't hear them. And the little guy with him says, yes, you did. One time I opened up my car door, a cloth upholstery, and there's this big pile of dirt, you know, in my seat. And one time he opens my front door. He doesn't knock. He just opens the door. He's standing there, and his overalls are wet in the front and brown in the back. And he goes, I don't have to use the bathroom. That's, you can see why I didn't like this child. But it wasn't his foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. A four-year-old, if your mother has been foolish enough to ignore what the Bible says and read some pop psychology book by people who don't know what they're doing, that's not that little guy's fault, but it was somebody's fault. And of course, when he got older and they sent him to school, immediate, you know, problems. I don't know what happened to him later, but he was given a bad start. The rod and the proof bring wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. We're going to start with parenting pitfalls in our next, let's take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll do one more session and then go to our Q&A. Thanks, Mike.